Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and get your first month free. Just $1 down, $15 a month. No commitment. Deal ends Friday, February 13th. You coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Welcome to the Metal Pit Podcast. This is where we dig deep into the riffs, the legends, and the chaos that make heavy metal what it is today. You can check out our latest reviews, Metal Maiden of the Month, interviews, and more at our website, the www.themetalpit.org. Stay connected with us on Instagram and Facebook at The Metal Pit and at The Metal Pit Podcast. And visit our YouTube channel at The Metal Pit 666. If you have any album suggestions or maybe you want to be a guest on an episode, email us podcast@themetalpit.org. Please rate and review us. Here we go, The Metal Pit Podcast. And my guest this week is Eric, one of the writers on the Metal Pit. How are you doing today, Eric?
I am doing great, Blake. I'm pretty fired up to talk about King Diamond today. How are you doing?
I'm good. And yes, we're going back to 1987 and the King Diamond album, Abigail. And we are going to finish off with our top 10 albums of 1987, even though I'm pretty sure I have done this before. But I have no idea if I put them in the same order that I did the last time I did it, because we could always change how I'm feeling that day, whether what album I would put where. So anyway, so we'll get to that later. But first, a little bit about, we've done a couple episodes on Merciful Fate, I think the Melissa album and Don't Break the Oath or A Dangerous Meeting. I'm sorry, I forget what the title of the album is. I think it's A Dangerous Meeting, I think.
Nice. The yellow nice
one. So I've done that in the past. But this is the first solo King Diamond album. So of course, King Diamond, he was born Kim. I guess he didn't want to use that name in concert. Kim Bendix Peterson or Pedersen. He was born in 1956. So he's 69 years old. But he's still going, as far as I can tell here. Of course, he's a Danish heavy metal icon. And of course, he was probably the first person that had a painted face that played metal and probably influenced bands like Ghost and other bands like that. And of course, before going solo, he fronted Merciful Fate, which of course I already mentioned. And Merciful Fate were a blueprint, I guess, to black metal, not necessarily the sound, but more the lyrical content. Because it's King Diamond's microphone is an upside down cross of bones. I'm not sure if he's always had that or not.
Very spooky.
Let's see. It says, while Merciful Fate focused more on satanic themes, King Diamond's solo stuff is more about his story writing, I guess, since this is a concept album. And the next album, Them, was also a concept album.
And I think, Grandma.
And I think Conspiracy was also a part two of Them or something, I think I just read.
That sounds Conspiracy. Yeah, that sounds right. That's a great album, too.
So I think that's a concept album as well. I'm not sure if, I don't know if all, and I think the one that's coming out this year or next year is also a concept album, I believe. Because he had a song out a year ago, I think. But
I heard that, yeah. There was a single that came out.
It's called The Institute, I think. I thought there was a change of name, but it's about a mental institution, but I believe it's a concept album. but it's supposed to be out later this year or early next. And Merciful Fate is also supposed to have a new album, but it probably won't be out till after King Diamond's album out. And so it might not be for another 2 years when he'll be 70 years old or 71 years old.
Man, he's busy.
I don't know. Because Merciful Fate hasn't had an album in many years. Okay, anyway. Oh, I don't know. We want to talk about, I guess I've probably talked about here. Did you hear Merciful Fate or did you hear King Diamond before you heard Merciful Fate maybe? Or when did you
hear? That's a good question, Blake. Yeah, I was exposed to Merciful Fate by a band member of mine in my first band. I actually saw, I don't know if I should save it for when we get to the song, but it doesn't really matter. But I saw the video to The Family Ghost on the Metal Half Hour, which actually predates Headbangers Ball on MTV. And I didn't know what I saw, but the guitar playing just really jumped off the page. And I was like, okay, that's King Diamond. And he's quite a character. He's pretty dramatic. But I was exposed to King Diamond first, and I wasn't sure what to think. But after I saw the video, maybe a second or third time, I was like, man, this guitar play and the song is spectacular. It really grabbed me. Yeah, and I'm sure you heard Merciful Fate first, right? I know you're a bigger Fate fan, Diamond.
And
yeah.
Older than you.
Yep, it's the truth.
Yeah, so I heard probably, I don't know if it, no, actually, I think if I
was remember, it Don't Break the Earth?
I got it at, when I was in high school, way back over in the 80s, my janitor, I've told this story before, but my janitor, not my janitor, the school's janitor, one of the janitors, sold me a bunch of heavy metal albums that he had that he didn't buy anymore. And one was Merciful Fate's, the yellow one, Don't Break the Oath, or
nice,
called The Dangerous Meetings, or I forget the title of the album.
That should be Don't Break the Oath. Yeah, it's like a yellowish kind of golden cover.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think that's when I first heard Merciful Fate, actually, was buying that, because I just bought them because they're heavy metal, because I was into heavy metal and I must have had stuff on my locker that he's seen. And so I bought that from him. So I think it was that one. Then I did go back to Melissa, and then I listened to Merciful Fate all the time, every album. And yeah, and then, of course, when King Diamond came, of course, I would check it out, of course, because he's in it. And Michael Denner also is in this album, who is also in Merciful Fate. I didn't even realize, I forgot, because I know Andy the Rock is the main, I don't know if he's the main guy here, but.
Yeah, LaRocque. Yeah, LaRocque's the man.
I don't know, is it LaRocque? Okay, so I'm French. I'm not French, but I'm reading it.
Yeah, it does sound a bit French. Yeah, French. Yeah.
But so I don't know. Yeah, so Denner is on this album. I'm not sure if he was on.
Yeah, it should be Pete Black. I'm pretty sure it's Black. I know Pete Black, he was definitely on Conspiracy. I'm pretty certain he was on them.
Yeah.
Just the guitar style. Yeah. And
Timmy Hansen is still a bass player on those two, both of those albums, these like Abigail and them.
Yeah.
And Mickey D is on the drums, I believe.
I was going to ask you about Mickey D, if he was back with King, because he had joined Motorhead for a while. And I was hoping he'd come back to King Diamond. So it sounds like he's back with them.
I'm not sure if he's. I'd have to. That's
okay.
I did scan over it. I know they have a female bass player. Merciful Fate does. I'm not sure about King Diamond. Becky Baldwin is the bass player for Merciful Fate, I believe, now. But again, because they did do some shows last year or 2 years ago or something. And she was the bass player there. They did have a bass player. I think it was Timmy Hansen, actually, who has passed away from cancer. When. I hope it. I should have checked that before I say he was dead, if the case is. Sorry about that. If you're still alive and you're listening, sorry. But I was reading stuff, but I didn't really make a note of it. Okay, so where am I? Let me get back to my notes here. As we said, this is a concept album. So briefly, the story is set in 1845, before I was born. A young couple.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work. With over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and get your first month free. Just $1 down, $15 a month. No commitment. Deal ends Friday, February 13th. You coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Miriam and Jonathan move into an old family mansion. They are warned by seven mysterious horsemen to turn back. They soon discover the house is haunted by the spirit of Abigail, a stillborn child from 1777, who was a product of an affair and was murdered by the Count de La Fay. And Abigail wants to be reborn through Miriam, I guess. This kind of sounds like the plot to Bride of Chucky, which I just watched the other day.
Oh, really?
So I don't know if this is supposed to be a true story or if this is also a made-up story. I know, not sure, actually.
King's got the imagination side. I'd imagine it's fictional.
I know that them album, which is about his grandma and stuff, I know he made that up, but I'm not sure if this is supposed to be a true story or not. But anyway. Okay, so as I mentioned, I already mentioned some of the band members. I think I already mentioned them all, actually, didn't I? Timmy Hansen, bass, drums, and Denner. LaRocque. Is that how you said it? LaRocque?
LaRocque.
King Diamond, of course. Or Kim, as his family calls him.
Poor guy. I can understand him changing it. King, yes.
Yes. Now, I'm not sure why King Diamond. I'm not sure why he went with Diamond. I don't know. Seeing why he named himself that. And by the way, my dog's name is King. Not necessarily because of King Diamond, but
maybe because of Elvis.
But it's funny, there's a soccer field right in our backyard and it's called the King Diamonds. I'm not sure why.
How about that?
Actually, a baseball diamond. There is a
exactly
in there too, but there's two soccer fields, so maybe that name came before the soccer fields were put there. But anyway, it was just, I should take a picture of it. It says,
King. Yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah, you should definitely post that on the socials.
Anyway, so let's get into the album. And it starts off with an instrumental with Funeral. So do you want to talk about that?
This one will be pretty quick, at least on my side. That's the intro to the album. It offers a creepy mood with some keyboards and then spoken word for King Diamond just to set the stage. And you already covered kind of the concept. I do really like how the music builds. I'd be curious how many tracks that keyboard part, it has a Beethoven / kind of Mozart, like that dramatic buildup at the end. It's pretty interesting. And you're like, okay, where are they going with this? I do what they did there. And it's good because it's concise. I could see how some bands might draw out something like this, but I think King chose it's just a brief song. Again, it's an introduction to set the stage, I think set the tone really for the Abigail album. What'd you think of it, Blake?
And I guess the funeral, it's called The Funeral, so I guess it's supposed to be Abigail being nailed into her coffin or something from what I understand. And
the seven silver spikes.
Yes. And it's just, and there's a distorted voice, which is like a narrator thing and stuff. But yeah, it's just an opening thing. And
yeah.
So there's really, there's not a lot to say about it. There's not no big guitar solos in it or anything. It's mostly synthesizer kind of stuff in there. So then we get to the song Arrival. I'll let you start on every song. So Arrival.
This is a way to, the band truly kicks off the album here with Arrival. I really like how they add this, the combination of the gallop by the band, and then Andy LaRocque covers the minor guitar theme here. It's very memorable, and then the King really comes in with his, he has that sinister voice, and he has the operatic vocals. The verses are cool. The choruses throughout the album are excellent. Man, Andy LaRocque, what a glorious, whammy, speed-picking solo in that. I feel like Yngwie would be proud. This is a great song, and as much as I love the album Them, I think this is actually a more superior intro to the album. Notice I don't really count The Funeral. It is the first official track, but as far as the band goes, like Arrival to me is like the best King Diamond opener as far as any of their albums are concerned, in my opinion. What do you think of this one?
Yes, I haven't listened to this album in many years. No, I did last night. Quickly. And I noticed there's all kinds of great guitar solos and guitar licks and things.
Big time.
Yes, everything throughout the album. And of course, King Diamond, I don't know if he changes his voice as much in Merciful Fate as he does like on this album or probably the following albums, because I think I have a quote about it later, but I'll get to that, about how he learned, because he's got different voices. He'll sing whatever style you want to call it. I don't know what you want to call it, but then he'll go to a falsetto, like opera kind of stuff. Back and forth, so it's almost there's three singers or something, kind of like there. If you didn't know it was one guy, you might think, "Well, there's different singers in this band," but no, it's all King changing it. And so it's pretty cool that way. But I don't think he did that as much in Merciful Fate as he does in King Diamond, because he's more about he's telling a story now with this concept album and them and Conspiracy that we talked about. So he's telling a story and he's like being an actor kind of thing or whatever with his different voices and laughing. There's a lot of laughing in this album too, evil laughter. Yeah.
I meant to make a note on that. Yeah, I was trying to give those omens or maybe possession, but one of the songs he was like laughing. I meant to write a note down, but you're right about that.
and there's a bunch of echo effects throughout the album too that always is cool, I think. It's pretty basic stuff, but.
Yeah. And real quick, Blake, I'm not the Merciful Fate aficionado that you are. I own a few albums by them, but I think you're completely 100% correct where Merciful Fate, it seemed like he typically used one voice. He would hit a high note here or there, but he typically would use his like kind of low to mid range. And with the King, with the solar stuff, he definitely pushed the boundaries more with some of their shrieks and then some of the kind of aggressive, almost like black metal-esque vocals, the harsh, gravelly vocals.
I watched a YouTube video. I've talked to you about this before, but that there's a girl that she used to be an opera singer that has a YouTube channel and she listens to groups, all kinds of genres, but
that's right.
Some of the heavy metal ones, but the Charismatic Voices, her YouTube name, you want to see it. But she did one on Sleepless Nights, which isn't on this album, of course.
Great song. Yeah.
It was interesting to hear her take on King Diamond, because that was the first time she's ever heard him. And
so I got to check that out.
So it's interesting that I was hoping it was a song from this album. But anyway, but it's very interesting to hear her talk about it and stuff and because she knows all the the technical stuff about guitars. She knows the technical stuff about singing. I don't know any technical stuff. But
you're great with the bios.
And I guess this song Arrival, which is always a good song, is Jonathan and Miriam arrive at the mansion. And this is where the Black Horsemen stop their carriage to deliver a warning, saying 18 will become 9. And again, when I listened to this album back in 1987, I probably didn't even read even though I listened to it and I know it was a story, I don't think I read the lyrics as much as I would sometimes.
Probably I didn't either. Yeah.
Probably, I don't know if I think I had this in vinyl, but I don't think I really got into the lyrics as much or whatever back then. Like I did with some, like when I first got the Number of the Beast, Iron Maiden, of course, that's all I had for heavy metal when I first got that. So I was reading the lyrics and everything, but then there was so much. Like when we get to our 1987 list, you can see how many albums there is. And those are just our top 10 when they're whatever, a top 10.
There's a lot.
Whatever. A lot of good albums that year. Anyway, so yes. So let's go to number 3, A Mansion in Darkness.
This one really has some churning guitars along with a relentless rhythm section.
Race to savings for your next project when you shop at Menards. Get the comfort and support you need with a new mattress from Serta. Find the perfect mattress for a deep and restorative night's sleep. Take control of your sleep and save big money on Serta mattresses now at Menards. Plus, view our weekly flyer on Menards.com and race to savings on more great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Trying to see here. This song and one other one I'll come up to, like obviously you and I, we've heard these albums over many years, but this one, like for whatever reason, and maybe a little bit of it's like I had my headphones on this morning. I already listened to, like I told you all sure with our listeners, I already made a 1987 playlist and I listened to the whole thing. It cracked 14 hours. I did skip a few songs. I'll admit that. Not King Diamond. But yeah, Mansion of Darkness is definitely one. I like this morning. I was like, oh my God. I was like, yeah, I forgot how much I really enjoy this song. And it's, I mean, it's really moving with these 16th note rhythms. And it's interesting because it's pretty heavy. It's fast. But the one thing I always take away from this album and maybe really King Diamond overall is that is while it's metallic, that it's very musical too. Just the way the songs are constructed, the chord choices, some of this, the keyboard parts underlying, and then some of the solos. I didn't even mention anything about solos on this particular song, but it's a great track. And I was just reminded how it's one of the faster King Diamond songs. I'm thinking actually ahead, let's see, three albums to the Eye. And I feel like this song could certainly be an influence, probably is an influence on the Eye, because there's quite a bit of up-tempo riffage on the Eye. So this could be like almost a forecast or a premonition. Sounds a little bit deep, but of that album. Great tune though. Yeah.
And yeah, that's something that girl mentioned in that since she was an opera singer, that their music even sounds classical sometimes. There's Sleepless Nights has some slow stuff in it, of course.
Acoustic guitar parts, yeah.
Start there and stuff. And of course, his falsetto singing is very much opera, like whatever. But yeah, they do have the theater kind of thing going on here, like with his songs, and you could just picture it being like on stage and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I did make a note that I really liked the outro solo of the album or the song, because they had an outro guitar solo, which is a little bit different than some.
That, you know what? That's, I'm glad you brought that up, because I have that kind of on my notepad here. And yes, I wrote basically everything out. I made a few notes on my phone yesterday when I was in Starbucks, but I knew I wouldn't be able to listen to the whole album at Starbucks, but I made a few notes on a couple of other songs. But on this one, I scribbled to the side, the halftime outro is clever. And you're right, the solo is spectacular too, but I love how they just kick into that halftime groove, and there's really cool palm muting in there. And I could honestly hear, like, that, to me, that sounds like an influence on some early thrash too.
Yes.
But yeah, I'm glad you pointed that out, Blake.
Now, I'm looking at a website that has the lyrics, and it also says who does the guitar solos. I'm not sure how they know this or if it's accurate.
I think they took it from the album sleeve, because I had the CD. Yeah, I had the cassette and CD for this, actually for just about all the King Diamond albums. But the inner sleeve actually would say who played the solo, which I thought was really cool, because not all bands did that or have done that. Yeah. So I thought that was pretty wise on their part. And maybe the guitarist wanted people to know, but yeah, they both have their chops, that's for sure.
Or maybe they want to see who thinks they're the better solos. I don't know.
You never know.
At the end of the lyrics for the song, it says solo Mike, and then it says theme and solo Andy. So I don't know if that means the outro solo is Andy, or if it's both of them. I don't know.
It should be Andy at the end. Yeah, I'm looking at what you're talking about. Solo Mike, and then theme and solo Andy, because they reprised that theme, which again, the song... We're only on the third track, but the song, and I didn't want to write too much for each song, but the song, again, like Arrival, it has a melodic guitar theme, which is excellent. It shouldn't be glossed over, but there's only so much like we can make notes of. But they come back to the theme, which is very classically inspired. And then, yeah, Mike has the solo. The theme is, they reprise the theme, and then Andy lets it rip. So, yeah, it's pretty cool. It's even, I don't know, even like, back then, and I would say even moving forward, a lot of bands wouldn't really do that. They would just have like a face melting solo and be done with the song. But you can tell that King Diamond and his guitarist, they really put a bit more thought into it, not to dismiss any other metal bands. I love a lot of it out there. But yeah, they approached. I think that's the thing I respect a lot, is the way they approach their songwriting composition and then writing themes and then the solos. Yeah, you can definitely tell they're not just trying to throw together three or four chords, songs, verse, chorus. They definitely want to make a statement. And obviously it centers around King's lyrics, but yeah, the musicians certainly make the music kind of a story unto itself.
Yeah. And since it's been a long time since I've listened to this album fully, I was listening to A Mansion in Darkness and I hear the guitar solo at the end, but I'm thinking, oh, here's a cool solo. And then the song's over. So I forgot that, obviously, of course, because
It's been a while. Yeah.
But anyway, so yeah, so that's why I made a note of it. Okay. And we get to, I think this is the first single, The Family Ghost, which you said you saw the video of, which I did see, watch the video the other day of this. I think maybe that's the only video they made from this album. I didn't see anything else pop up. So yeah, so I guess this was probably the first single from the album. So what do you think of this one?
Yeah, so I don't want to repeat myself from earlier, but I thank God that MTV actually played metal music at one point, actually played videos, and the Metal Half Hour was a great escape coming home from school, 3:30 in the afternoon. I'd be fired up there to see what they were playing. This is like late middle school, early high school for me. But yeah, what an opening riff. One of my favorites, honestly, with the single notes. And then they have these unexpected power chords on the upbeat. And I got to say that I'm certainly no drummer, but I do listen to, I always listen to music like very closely, obviously guitar since I've been playing for a long time. But I feel like this is one of Mickey D's like finest songs that he's performed on, definitely on this album. He does some really cool things on the ride cymbal throughout as well, but just really talented, skilled drumming on this. And the King's vocals, obviously he hits with his crazy high notes during the verses. Trying to think if there's anything else. I really see how they crank the tempo up in the middle of the section. They have that bridge. It's not really a bridge. It's more of a brief interlude, but it's a key change. And then they have a tempo change as well. But Mike and Andy, I have plenty of dueling harmonies. The guitar play is just, along with the drumming, it's jaw dropping. Really like the way the song's written. It's a great single, man. Really, you know, the video is a little bit wacky, but definitely the song a lot.
As I read the lyrics here and of the song,
I meant to rewatch the video.
He's just like reading a story. It's like you're reading a novel here when you're looking through the lyrics. It's not like your typical songs, and there's not really a chorus necessarily, I don't think. Not your typical chorus, anyway. And I guess the story of the song is that the Count is taking Jonathan to the crypt where Abigail's remains are. And then he says right at the end of the song that the spirit of Abigail is inside your wife, Miriam, already. You must take her life now. So I guess he's saying that he should kill her so that Abigail could live is what it's saying.
Yep, yep. Pretty foreboding
stuff. I do like
the
part, you know, where he says... I was reading the lyrics and I find it funny, but he says, beware of the slippery steps. You can easily fall and break your neck. And he says, break your neck in an evil, dark way. And
yeah.
It's an evil laugh after that.
Yeah. Yeah. I like the laugh a lot. It's effective. Seems effective for that part of there. Yeah.
But anyway, yeah. So I don't know. That's the first single, but I don't think it probably made it to the radio or anything. So it says, break your neck on it. Okay. Then we get to track 5, the 7th day of July 1777. Okay, what do you think of this?
Yeah, I glanced over the lyrics of the whole album this morning too while I was listening to it and making notes. And I guess all I'll say from that is actually I'll cut myself off and go back. So the acoustic guitar periodically slows down the album. It's got a really nice solo by Andy to start things off. And then the band kicks in. It sounds really cool. The music mirrors the drama and thread of King's lyrics. Mike's melodic solo is excellent. Yeah, I really like the use of the palm muting on this. Actually, sorry, I jumped ahead. That's actually the next song. So I didn't write much at all for this song, but I do really like it. I feel like we don't even have to get to the summary of the album. I don't know how you feel. But I don't feel like the song has like any fillers at all. Like every song on here, to me, can stand on its own. If you heard it on YouTube or you're streaming it or whatever, they sound great. They all hold their own. They all have their own meaning. There's great musicianship. King's vocals. His vocals are obviously polarizing. He doesn't have any weak moments vocally, and the music certainly doesn't either. What did you think of this one, Blake?
Yeah, I was going to say that this could also, like, it's a concept album story, and it's hard. None of the songs really, I don't think, stand out above the other songs. They're all good, like you say, but I don't think, as I listen to it, there's not one song I'd say, oh, this is my favorite. I couldn't really find one and say, oh, this is my favorite, because there's great solos everywhere in it. And I could say that for myself, his voice gets some people might not like his voice. I guess it gets so high when the falsetto thing there. And I could see that you could get sick of it after a while. If you listen to it, you might get sick of it thinking, oh, I can't handle this. But as is, he's just like telling a story for every song. It could almost be like one long song, like the whole album, with just your different stories as you go along.
Ah, you're right. You're right. It flows together very well. I can see where you're coming from.
Because the song, they're not all the same, but I mean, they're all, it's the same style, of course. It's King Diamond stuff. I don't think we really have a ballad or anything like that.
Yeah.
Really, except for a few acoustic moments, of course. But yeah, so anyway, that was just a thought I had there. But okay, then we get to track 6, Omens. And I always thought this song was called Deadly Omens, just because he says it so much.
He says it, yeah.
But it's just called Omens. But anyway, so what do you, this could, would have been more like a single for me, I thought, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, this one has such a, it's funny you mentioned that, because yeah, this would definitely be like at least maybe a second single, because the chorus is very short, direct, and it fits the song with the Deadly Omens, like you said. This is the other song on the album where maybe it's just repeated listening. Like I listened to that, my 1987 playlist, which cracked 14 hours. But coming back and listening to the whole album, like A Mansion in Darkness and this song, Omens, like they both, they're better than what I remember. They sound like they're more interesting to me just as a fan of King Diamond and then as a guitarist as well. But I really do like their use of palm muting. And this one, this is one of their more, I don't want to take too much away from what we're going to talk about Possession too. But this one has some really cool palm muting with single notes. I feel like the stops are really effective too. They don't do it too much, but that dan, 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 dan. It's cool because they have the synthesizers behind it. And then Mickey D too, with the drums and cymbals. I feel like that's really effective and well done. And I already covered the chorus, which I made notes on. The keyboard interlude is unexpected, but I like that it signifies that Andy and Mike are about to trade off on some wicked solos. What do you think of Omens, Blake?
Yeah, like I said, it sounds more like it should have been the first single.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
It seems more catchy with just saying Deadly Omens, even though he always does the Omens part high-pitched thing. But it feels more like a single than The Family Ghost does. But anyway, but yeah, it's a good song. And what did I have to say? Anything? Oh, yeah, and the keyboards kind of mimic church bells in this song, maybe. And let's see, this was what happened. The church bells ring on the flowers die, whatever. Jocelyn's sitting at a table set for 3 people, the third being for Abigail.
Abigail.
Abigail. Yeah, okay. Then we get to the Possession, as we're getting possessed. What do you want to say about the Possession?
Let's see. Possession. So this song has so much to offer. I do a summary on this one. It offers like chunky and direct rhythm guitars, key changes, tempo changes, King Diamond's versatility. They throw in some acoustic guitars in the middle and some of the best drumming on the album. It's a punchy song and it shows like the versatility of the band. It's another like rock solid song.
Yes, and I was just reading the lyrics. The last paragraph is, speaking with different tongues, Miriam was eaten alive from inside. And she said, I'm having your baby, my love. But it wasn't about, oh no, she was possessed. Okay. Did King Diamond, he never made a movie, did he? I don't know why he never, like.
Yeah, he definitely should, because the lyrics on really his first, I guess all of his albums that I own, he definitely tells plenty of like really kind of dark stories, but they're elaborate too. He does put quite a bit of thought into the setting, the characters, what's taking place. Like the Possession, pretty scary stuff, but it's well thought out though.
Oh, well, you think
he should
would have done something about this or had somebody else write it for him.
Yeah. And these days, I like how you mentioned the novel. And these days, what about a graphic novel? Like yeah. you can picture some of these things. What if somebody did a comic book-esque, but it'd be like just one like graphic novel of the Abigail. I mean, you can do Fatal Portrait too, but like this and them, I could conspiracy as well. They would be, I'd buy them. I'd definitely buy them.
Yeah, I never really thought about that, about how if the technology would have been like this back then, or if King Diamond was out now and he was only 25 or whatever he is when he made this album, 30 probably. But if he would have did more stuff like that, if the options were there, it's interesting. And even more videos too. Like he's only got, as far as I could tell, one video from this album. And
yeah, and I meant to rewatch it before we discussed the podcast, but that's okay. But yeah.
Anyway, okay.
Just one.
So I already read the lyrics at the end. So now we get to track 8, Abigail. I guess this is the title track. So what do you think of this one?
This is, while I agree with you on one hand, like they're all like really good songs, Abigail is one of my personal favorites on this album. Just the title track is brilliant from beginning to end. Really like how the guitarists use the Phrygian dominant mode. It really fills us in on how these guitarists, like they know their music theory to capture this mood for the song. And I thought it was really smart how, and I'd have to look it up. I'm not sure who did the keyboard playing on this, but the synthesized strings behind that opening riff, and then they do it at the end. It adds another layer of musicality, which I think it just makes it makes the theme stand out more. And if it was like an average like theme or melody, it wouldn't make a difference. But since there's a lot of thought put into it, and the note selection is great, I learned this on guitar, and the intro is tricky, but it's very cool. It's well thought out and crafted. It sounds cool. It's fun to play. Yeah, there truly wasn't anything out there like this in 1987. The main riff is impactful with its sliding power chords. Then you factor in like King's spooky vocal melody and occasional shrieks. Yeah, you can tell this isn't some half-baked band or song. I made notes for the solos, and these are some of the highlights on Abigail. What a cool thing by Mike with his use of the harmonizer, and then Andy's use of the whammy bar on this song and throughout the album, combined with his blistery neoclassical runs, still floor me to this day. I just mentioned at the end how I learned this song thanks to a magazine. Remember those? Guitar for the Practicing Musician. The intro took some patience and repetition, but yeah, this is one of my favorite King Diamond songs. What did you think about this one, Blake?
Well, yeah, I liked it. And again, I'm just reading the lyrics here, and I like, I am alive inside your wife. Miriam's dead. I am her head.
Her head.
And it's closer. And you mentioned the keyboard. It doesn't list who plays the keyboards, but under
production,
it says Roberto Falco does engineering.
Like a guest.
But I don't know if
he
played the keyboards or if he did the production on the keyboards, but it doesn't really credit anybody except there to say who played the keyboards. So I don't really know unless it's.
Yeah, it definitely adds, it does add another element. Thanks for checking on that. It does add another element to the band. I know some people are like really down on like keyboards and metal, and sometimes they don't always fit, but I feel like since it's complimentary, like on this album, I feel like it enhances the musicianship and the overall sound and scope of the album.
I think keyboards and pianos, they add, especially in horror kind of story, like this is like a horror story. And so it adds the creepiness to it and stuff.
Yes.
Along with King's voice is also creepy at times, of course. And his laughing, there was more laughing on this one. I just put down laughing in my notes here. So it's all laughing there. And yeah, so yes, it is a good song. And then we end with the Black Horseman. And this is your epic since it's 7 minutes. Can anybody think of this one?
Blake, I guess I should be ticked off at you because you stole my word. I will save that for a little bit later. But you know what? I'll go ahead and piggyback. If this, as you mentioned, this cracks 7 minutes. If this were a 5-minute song, like it still would be really an epic because it still sounds and feels like an epic with its lush acoustic guitars, lush acoustic and clean guitars, which they use later, plethora of guitar harmonies, and then the precise rhythm section and edgy yet glass-shattering vocals truly make this an epic for the ages. I thought it was, and I didn't write this down, but I thought it was pretty bold for them to open with this strict like acoustic guitar playing, especially for a really kind of ominous metal album. But they definitely show their musicality with the intro to this song with the steel and nylon string guitars. I really like how the band enters with the drums and bass and then the heavy guitars, and then there's still the acoustic guitar playing and King's hitting those high notes. So there they stood at the top of the stairs, Miriam in the mirror, Jonathan was scared. He's like shrieking. He's really hitting some glass shattering notes there. It all really melds together so well. This song is definitely one of the more thought out songs on the album. I would probably say the most as far as the band goes. But yeah, some of King's vocals, I made a note. Some of his early vocals can make the hair on your arms stand up. Some of the electric guitar parts are pretty straightforward. But yeah, you can hear like some of the strings during the verses. And I mentioned they just add like another dimension to the song. This is one of my other favorite songs on the album. It never stayed with me. Like when this album was out, when I was younger, I never thought of this as like a favorite song off the album. But this one, Arrival and like Abigail, or if I had to choose, would be like my they would be my three favorites. But I think it's a great, I didn't write this down either, but this is, you know, how we always talk about having strong opening tracks. I feel like also, and it's important, it's imperative to have a strong closing track. And I feel like Black Horseman is definitely that. You cover the epic scope of, what did you feel in this? How did you feel like how this song closed? Like you've done a good job of nailing the lyrics. How do you feel like the lyrics and like the overall song kind of closed, ends the album?
This is, of course, the end of the story. I guess the story of this song is the Seven Horsemen, the Black Horsemen, Seven Horsemen. Not sure why there's seven, whatever. They arrived too late to stop the birth because Miriam was giving, I don't really understand the story. Anyway, they take the infant Abigail away to the chapel in the forest to perform a final ritual. But anyway, yeah, it's a great song. It's a good closer, and I always like my long songs. But, and yes, and it's got some somber acoustic passages in it, like you mentioned. But yes, it's a great song. Now, in this lyrics of this site, there's another song, but I see on Wikipedia that it's a bonus track called Shrine. Have you ever heard that song?
It's pretty funny that you brought that up, because I was looking at it this morning. I was like, I do not recall hearing a song by King Diamond on this album called Shrine. So I figured it was some kind of bonus. Maybe it's like an import bonus track. I'm not really sure. Yeah. I've never heard it before. I glanced over the lyrics, but go ahead.
It shows a remastered version, whenever that was released, I guess. This okay. Shrine is on it. And then three of the other songs from this album, just rough mixes of it.
Okay.
Yeah, there's all these lyrics, but I'm not really sure. Maybe it's just an instrumental too. I don't know. Anyway, I didn't listen to it because I just realized it now by looking at these lyrics. Anyway.
Yeah, it caught me off guard too.
So we'll have to check that out.
A little bit of homework, right? Homework. Fun homework.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I just want this before we rate it. When a writer, Martin Popoff, he's a famous writer, he's from Canada, journalist, and he has a bunch of books, lots of books, on heavy metal bands, and albums. But he remarked the metallic excellence of the album, but was negatively taken back by the creepy package in the lyrics.
Interesting.
What it means by the package, like, I don't
know. Maybe the artwork? Maybe he didn't. I don't know. Artwork's not that
sure of the horses.
First, yeah.
I don't know, but
anyway, big time.
Making it. I think he still gave it. I'm not sure if that's his book. 8 out of 10. Doesn't matter. So, what would you give this out of 10?
Yeah, this one was pretty tough for me to call. I knew it was going to be above an 8 because I'm gonna say spoiler alert. It's in my top 5 as far as our 1987 albums. This album is a rock solid 9 for me. The way I talked about it, I guess it could be a 10, but it's easily a 9 for me, maybe a 9.5. I guess I probably sound like a politician, which I don't want to, but this is an album I replayed it in my youth and how music tastes change over the years. This album, I listened to it this morning. I didn't get bored at all. Like every song to me, like is meaningful. There's heaviness. There's groove. It's very musical. The King is the King. He does this thing vocally. I like it a lot, man. That's a strong 9 for me. I know you don't think quite as highly of this album as I do. What's your rating on this one, Blake?
Well, if I could have listened to it more, maybe I would have a different view. But I'm just gonna give it a 7, just because I'm comparing it to that fact that I like Merciful Fate albums.
I could see that.
And you would give them 9s or whatever, even a 10 probably for the Don't Break the Oath one, because I really love that one.
And awesome album. One. Yeah. That's a timeless album.
They are different, but even though it's King singing, they are different styles. And so I just prefer Merciful Fate better. And I think if I went back, I think I like the Them album better, but I probably only mostly maybe because of the story. I like the story better because about Grandma, Missy, blah, blah, blah.
And the tea.
the tea. Because I like horror movies and stuff like that. So anyway, so I would give it a 7. Now, have you ever seen King Diamond live or Merciful Fate live before?
I kicked myself because I ended up, this is probably the part where the listeners are like, oh man, he chose sports over a concert. I ended up going to this football draft party thing on one day instead of going and seeing King at night. I should have done both and just peeled myself off and gone to see the football thing the next day. But I had an opportunity to see him at Jackson Springfield and I missed him. I regret it when I think about it from time to time. He did come around here. So I think you had said, did he say that Merciful Fate came around Canada last year? King Diamond came solo here, but it was in West Virginia or like way up in Maryland and then couldn't do it. I'd still like to see him. I don't know how he sounds, but sadly, I've never seen him before. Did you ever catch him live?
Actually, I forgot. I just remembered that. I did.
Awesome.
I forgot. Awesome. I went to Spain 6 years ago. Yeah. There was a metal festival there and he played there.
How cool. Nice. How did he sound?
It was King Diamond, of course.
King Diamond.
And they shot, as far as I remember, 6 years ago, but whatever. But yeah, it sounded fine. It was great. And I would rather see Merciful Fate, of course, like I just said, songs. But I know they played Sleepless Nights and Andy LaRocque was there. And
nice.
Or who the rest of the band was necessarily. I don't remember that much stuff. But yeah, so I did see them and it was cool to see them at least once, even though I would like to see Merciful Fate if they go on tour again. I think I did have a chance to see them last time, but I don't remember why, if I had to work or something like that, or I don't know. I don't really remember, but it would be nice to see Merciful Fate.
Yeah. And Wesley, I'd like to see either one of them. I'd be thrilled to see either of them.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see. And this actually, so just a few notes about some stuff I read. I mentioned this a little bit earlier, but this is the album that King Diamond realized he could use his voice like an actor, he says, which is what I mentioned about how it's like a movie or theatrical, because he's changing his voice. He's talking evil, or he's singing evil, and then he's singing falsetto and whatever. And then from the Them album where he's talking like Grandma and stuff like that. So anyway, so that was one of the things there. And I did, okay, I mentioned this briefly earlier too, but the solo album Institute, as of early this year, is expected to drop later this year or early next year. Now, I'm not sure what the holdup is exactly. And it's going to be another horror studio. It's his first solo album since 2007. And it's supposedly it will be the first part of a trilogy set.
Set
in 1920s mental institution. So that means he's still going to make two more solo albums.
Wow.
And he'll be 70 years old next year or whatever. I don't know. Man. It says anyway.
He's got aspirations. Man, bro.
Yes. And they've already performed 2 new tracks from the album. But
oh, that's cool.
The reason the album's not out and might not be out this year, I don't know. Don't have all the details about that.
Wonder if it's a management thing. Maybe it's like a management or like attorney.
Manager, you would think, but I don't know. I'm not sure.
agents.
Supposedly they're booked for Wacken, whatever it's called, and Copenhagen this year. I assume that means under King Diamond. I'm not sure. And then the Merciful Fate reunion. Hank Sherman, one of the guitarists, has confirmed that instrumentally the first is mostly their first album since 1999.
And wow.
That features Becky Baldwin on bass, which is what I mentioned.
Yeah, that's right.
But it will come out after King Diamond's album. So like I said, maybe not.
Okay.
I don't know. Hopefully King Diamond has good health, like I just said. And
yeah,
stuff can still happen. Okay. So now we're going to do a top 10 from 1987. Now, should I go first? Maybe I'll go first.
You should go first because I've talked plenty about the King. It's all you.
I've did this before, as I said, probably.
We did it a long time, a few years ago.
If you're a listener of this podcast, don't be upset if my top 10 is in a different order or includes different albums. First, my honorable mentions, I had Metallica's Garage Days EP because I love that, but I thought since it's an EP, I won't include it in the list. But it only had 5 songs on it. This was before, of course, Garage Inc. came out, which was a double album, but this was just the 5 songs. But I know I played the shit out of that because I loved Teller, of course, back then, and I still do love
No
that.
Doubt.
So
yeah.
That would probably be in the list if I want to include it as part of it. And Testament, The Legacy, almost made the list. I probably could make the list tomorrow if I, whatever. But anyway, so my number 10, I went with Joe Satriani, He's Surfing with the Alien, which I loved back then. Of course, all these albums I listened to so much in the 80s, and I still listen to most of these albums once in a while because that's how much I like them. And I'm sure there was others that I missed here. And I don't have King Diamond on my list here because I know you said you have them in your top 5. So I don't even have them on my list.
Nope.
Not that, again, that it's bad or anything. There's just so much stuff. And I got a lot of thrash on my list. So anyway, Joe Satriani, number 10. Number 9, I got Tankard, the German thrash band with their album Chemical Invasion. They have like lots of albums, Tankard. But I think that was their second album, if I'm not mistaken. And Chemical Invasion has a great intro to that song. It's one of my favorite intros of any metal song ever. They play some like 12-bar blues in it, which isn't original or anything, but it's so cool in it. And so if you haven't heard that song, Chemical Invasion, check it out. My number 8, probably, I don't know if anybody's even heard of this band. I don't know if you've heard of this band. And they're called EZO. They were Japanese, or I think Japanese. And the album is just called EZO. But I love the album. And it's funny because Gene Simmons produced it.
Oh, wow.
So that's the only good thing Gene Simmons has ever did in his life, is producing this album. No offense to Kiss fans. I don't like Kiss. So check that out if you can. EZO, I think it's good. And it's not really thrash. It's just, I don't know, it's different. They're Japanese. They sing in English. But I like the album a lot. Number 7, I got Death Angel with the Ultraviolence. Their debut album, which I think they were probably in their teens with that album. But it has Kill As One, which is one of my favorite Death Angel songs in general. Number 6 has the classic Dio with Dream Evil. I don't really need to say much about that. I guess that would be my 3rd favorite Dio album, probably. That is
nice.
That's their third. That's the 3rd album, right? I think
Dio's 4th. Or that was their 4th.
What was the 3rd one?
Sacred Heart.
Oh, Sacred Heart was the 3rd one. Oh, okay. Yeah. So I did Dream Evil better than that one, but the first two are my favorites. Okay, and number 5, I got Sabotage with the Hall of the Mountain King, which just
is
a classic song in 25 years ago, and the White Witch, and that's a great album. And it's more this before, even though the song Hall of the Mountain King has a classical feel to it, it's really before they got into more TSO kind of stuff later on with their classical influences. My number 4 is another German band, Helloween, with Keeper of the Seven Keys Part 1. And always big Halloween fan. My number three is Anthrax with Among the Living, which we have done a podcast on. So if you want to hear that, it's somewhere in the list. But we probably did that in season one. This is season four, by the way. This is our first album of season four podcast, as we just had our recap of 2025 was the first episode. Anyway, my number two is another thrash band with Exodus and Pleasures of the Flesh, which is probably my second favorite Exodus album after Bothered by Blood.
Better than what I remember. That's a really good album.
Yes. And like it has Parasite on it and Piranha. And I think is it Recover, Overdose, AC. I'm not sure if that's the same album. That might be the next album. I don't want to confuse it. Anyway, and my number one album is, which might be a surprise. I don't know. It's not a surprise to me, but it's Manowar, Fighting the World. I love that album. It's kind of short, but there's two like short songs in it. There's only five long songs, I think, on the album. Or something like that, or maybe seven. I don't know. There's two like short things, but man, I love Manowar, especially old Manowar. And so Fighting the World is my number one album of 1987. I'd have to go back and check to see if I said that on the other podcast, but I know it would be close.
I think you did. And I don't know. I feel terrible, but this is one that snuck by me. And it's funny because we talked about Manowar and I was all ready to talk about Kings of Metal for 88, but I was thinking this one's older than it is. So didn't mean to cut in on you, man. It's an awesome album. It's an awesome album.
Yeah, I love that album. And I love Manowar. And yeah, Kings of Metal is a great album too.
Yeah.
Okay, now let's hear your list.
All right. Well, let's see. It's funny, I actually wrote down something. I'm going to just switch my 10 and 9. Sorry, Overkill fans. So I'm going to actually go number 10, Overkill, Taking Over. I love Power Surge, Wrecking Crew. Number 9 will be Testament, because as I was telling you before we started the podcast, I feel like the legacy just gets better and better the more I listen to it. I had the cassette back in the day, but I really like Burnt Offerings, Over the Wall. Apocalyptic City is kind of like progressive thrash, pretty intense in musical too. Some great soloing, a lot of aggression. Chuck sounds incredible on the first album. It really does. It's funny, 1987 has a lot of great albums. Pardon me, while it doesn't touch like 86 or 84, it got hard for me to rate these albums really after these two awesome thrash albums. Like number 8, I have Dokken, Back for the Attack, which is, wow, stylistically very different than Overkill and Testament. But George Lynch is like one of my all-time favorite guitarists, and I guess I have a lot of all-time favorites. But it's a really solid album beginning to end. Lost Behind the Wall, Standing in the Shadows, and oh my gosh, Mr. Scary. What a phenomenal guitar instrumental. I love it, man. The rhythm playing, the soloing, it's outstanding. Check out Don't Knock Dokken unless you've listened to a full album. Back for the Attack is great. I would say Tooth and Nail would be my number one, but this is a really strong album. Number 7, I thought this might be a little bit higher, but Greater Things were definitely on the horizon for Sabotage. Number 7, you covered the title track, Hall of the Mountain King. Legions, what a killer groove. Love the bass intro. Awesome soloing. The riffing has just got, again, the groove is just sick. John's vocals, he hits some pretty crazy notes. He sounds pretty sinister on this one, in a different way than King. But White Witch, I just love the driving energy. That's a little more like their kind of power metal-esque earlier 80s Sabotage, but it's very well done. Number 6. Dio, Dream Evil. Man, Ronnie James Dio just sounds phenomenal on this album, beginning to end. I mentioned on X that his vocals are like an 11 out of 10 on this album. Craig Goldie gets some flack. I don't know why some people were giving him crap on X. And yes, Vivian Campbell's phenomenal, but Craig Goldie holds his own. Great songwriting. Sunset Superman, honestly, that's like a top 10, top 15 Dio song for me. I love it. I learned how to play it on guitar. I think it's brilliant songwriting, great guitar playing, excellent soloing. Night People, Although it's a ballad, it's an epic ballad. All the Fool Sailed Away, excuse me, is excellent. Probably should sip some coffee since I'm talking so much. Number five, Armored Saint, Raising Fear. I wasn't sure if this would make your list. Obviously, it didn't.
I did have that album, I think, but I don't. Yeah, I didn't even consider it, actually.
John Bush sounds great. Richard, the longtime guitar player, sadly passed away too young in his life. He really made an impact on the early Armored Saint. I know March of the Saint is widely considered as their like their best early album. I do that album quite a bit, but Raising Fear, they brought up a little bit more adrenaline, a little more heaviness. The production's not the best, but I really like how John Bush sounds. He can sing. He has that good kind of gravelly, raspy voice. So really, it's a good album. They were never really thrash. Like some of the, like Circus called them like thrash. They had some thrash influences, maybe more speed metal, but like progressive, not really power metal either. But the album is awesome beginning to end. If you like your music, like pretty heavy, pretty melodic, rock solid guitar playing and vocals, Raising Fear for you. So that's number five. Satriani, this is a hard one to place, but I love the early Satriani. I like all of his albums. Some of the latter had their moments, had their lulls, but this is really the one that I can't remember. Maybe you could look it up. It's not a big deal. I can't remember if Surfing with an Alien, if it went gold or platinum, but it was at the time, it was the most successful instrumental guitar rock album ever, like even more than Jeff Beck, which I was a little bit surprised by that because Beck definitely made a name for himself. And he's a great player in his own right. But Joe definitely elevated. He's just one of those early virtuosos. He showed so much with his knack for melody. He never considered himself a shredder, but he could shred with the best of them, with his tapping, legato playing. Man, you could definitely hear he influenced like a George Lynch, some of the 80s guys with a lot of his like hero and pull off stuff, whammy bar usage. But the title track's great. Crushing Day is one of my favorite Satch songs. That one's has a little bit of a metallic vibe to it. It's really driving rhythm. Great guitar melody, some nice whammy bar usage. Circles has some really tricky, I haven't learned that one, but has some 8-finger tapping on it. It's definitely more musical and slower, but really cool. Echo, it has some awesome lead guitar playing. Yeah, that one's just number four for me. Yeah, man. Yeah,
the album
go for
went
it.
Platinum in the United States, it says.
I thought it did. I thought it went platinum. I didn't want to misquote.
Gold in Australia and silver in United Kingdom. I don't really
know. Okay. Yeah, it was definitely one that put him on the map, and it really paved the way for, there was already like that shrapnel movement with your Tony McAlpines and your Jason Beckers, Marty Friedman, the list goes on. But I feel like Satriani definitely opened up some more ears and some more, opened up that doorway for fans of guitar virtuosos and instrumentalists, and you could be successful doing instrumental albums. But the thing I always loved about Satch real quick is just a lot of his songs, like you could whistle them or hum them, and those melodies would stay in your head for, at least for me, like sometimes minutes or hours at a time. That's what I loved about him. There might be better full-on shredders, but he always chose his notes wisely and really had a knack for a melody. Number three, this is hard. Like my top three is incredibly difficult. Halloween, Keeper of the Seven Keys, Part One. Future World is one of my favorite Halloween songs. Halloween, you want to talk about an epic? We've carried on about that one. The video was highly entertaining, and that's actually what turned me on to Halloween. I'm so glad they played that. Either Metal Half Hour, I think it was. Headbangers Ball played it some too. But yeah, great stuff, man. They're the forefathers of power metal, and they do it the best as far as I'm concerned, as far as power metal goes. Kiske's vocals, Kai, the boys definitely had it down for Keeper Part One, and Keeper Part Two was another gem as well. Yeah, number two, it was hard because Abigail, when we ranked, I actually remember this, but I remember I actually had King Diamond Abigail 3 and Keeper Part One is 2. There, I guess it depends on the day of the week for me, really with my top three. But I already talked kind of ad nauseum about Abigail and gushed about the entire album. And then number one, I have currently Among the Living by Anthrax. This is one of my all-time favorite thrash metal albums. Joey Belladonna just had a different style, a different delivery vocally. And Scott Ian's rhythm guitar playing, I still don't think he gets the credit he deserves. I don't know how you feel, Blake, but he's just a great, tight rhythm guitar player. He has his own distinct sound. A Skeleton in the Closet is one of the coolest riffs. And as he very like simplistic to start out, but those 16th and triplets, oh man, just love that attitude and vibe of the whole album. I Am the Law is one of my favorite Anthrax songs. Among the Living starts off with that creepy kind of clean guitar parts before they jump in with the awesome drumming and da 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 bum 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 bum. Yeah, it's just that album beginning to end. Absolutely no filler. It's a timeless album. I probably could switch around the three depending on the day of the week, but Among the Living is one of my top five thrash albums of all time. No hesitation whatsoever. Yeah, it's a great album, man.
And did you want to mention any honorable mentions?
Yeah, I felt pretty crappy for leaving out Manowar. It's like I said, it's ironic because I brought up Kings of Metal, which I listened to a little bit more, but Black Wind, Fire and Steel, that's one of Manowar's. If you're a fan of Manowar, that's one of your favorite songs typically. And yeah, I love that. A bass player in my first band, he wouldn't stop gushing or talking about that song. You love the bass playing. But yeah, I really love that album. And I'm trying to think, wasn't Blow Your Speakers off that album? I feel like, yeah, it's the second track. Yeah, that's actually what turned me on to them. I heard that. But Fighting the World, the title track. And what is it? Violence and Bloodshed. Oh my gosh. some of those notes the lead singer had, I was like, how the hell? Yeah, I don't know if he ever had some vocal training, but he had some crazy notes on Violence and Bloodshed and Black Wind, Fire and Steel. Those are two of my favorite Manowar songs. So that one gets an honorable mention. Candlemass, great album. Was there anything else? I feel like there might have been one more.
I'm going to go through a list here. I'm going to go through some other ones here that we necessarily didn't like, but I know some people do. Of course, Aerosmith had Permanent Vacation that year.
Yep.
Alice Cooper, mm-hmm. Raise Your Fist and Yell. Anthrax, I'm the Man EP.
That's right. That's right.
That's more rappy stuff. That was just for fun. Let's see. We got Bathory, Under the Sign of the Black Mark. Black metal, but I know
black metal
popular with a lot of people. Black Sabbath, mm-hmm. The Eternal Idol came out that year. Cacophony, Speed Metal Symphony. I don't know.
I actually had the CD. That's a blistering. Yeah, it's definitely an honorable mention for me. I should have wrote it down. I had that on CD. I listened to it. I probably drove people crazy with that because all the just so many notes and. Yeah, it's like Paganini, but like with distorted guitar playing. Yeah, Becker and Friedman, but go ahead. Yes, it's awesome.
Man, Celtic Frost, Into the Pandemonium. I think that is a big album for them. Dirty Rotten Whistles had an album called Crossover. Death, the band Death, Scream Bloody Gore.
Their first album.
Is that their first album? Yeah. So I'm mm-hmm. sure different to have that on the list. Now, this wouldn't be on my list, but Def Leppard's Hysteria came out that year. I like Pyromania album. It's probably
love that album, man.
Hysteria, they lost me. Faith No More had an album out that year, but that was Introduce Yourself, not with Mike Patton, so that's why it's not on my top 10 list. Great White had their album Once Bitten, Grim Reaper, Rock You to Hell.
That was a fun one.
Appetite for Destruction. Let's see who else we got here.
Judas that was Priest, a big hit.
Live album that year. Keel.
That's right.
Keel had an album out that year.
Yeah.
Keel.
They're like hard rock, kind of poppy, but yeah, it was. They were decent. That was a pretty good album. Is that the one that had like 4th of July? Did that have 4th of July on it? I didn't really like that song.
I'd have to look.
That's okay. No worries. Yeah.
Alice had an album, License to Kill. I think I might have did a podcast on that album. Sure.
I've heard of them.
Yeah. Somebody else really liked it. Who else? Let's see. Metallica mentioned them before. Motley Crue. We talked
about Whitesnake.
The podcast. Girls, girls, girls.
Yeah, don't forget Whitesnake.
I'm going in alphabetical
order. Just order. Oh, I got you. Yeah,
Motorhead. That's gonna be that year. Rock and roll. Mm-hmm. Let's see who else. Ozzy, of course, another live album tribute with, of course, Randy Rhoads on guitar.
That's definitely a top 10 for me. It was a top 10 for me when we did it, but it's live, so it's different. But that's a must own. Yeah. Go ahead.
I never Pretty Maids. I never really listened to them, but I know Future World was probably their most popular album that came out that year. Racer X had an album that year. Raven had Life's a Bitch, but that wasn't as good as All for One album. Sacred Reich had an album. Sacrifice, Canadian thrash band, Forward to Termination, which I suppose I could have had on my list, actually.
Hey, Blake, which Sacred Reich was it? I might have owned that one.
Sorry, Ignorance.
Okay.
And Sacred Child, it says. I'm not sure.
Okay, I like Surf Nicaragua. I think that was the next album, Surf Nicaragua. That was a great one. Fun times.
Tura had an album that year, Schizophrenia. Suicidal Tendencies had joined the army. And we talked Testament. Let's see. Trouble also had an album, Run to the Light. I'm a big Trouble fan, but that album just didn't make the top 10. Twisted Sister had an album, but Love Is for Suckers, it wasn't very good.
Yeah, I was a bump in the road, unfortunately.
And yeah, since you mentioned Whitesnake with Whitesnake album, which was a good album too. I listened to that a lot, but again, just didn't make my top 10.
Yeah, John Sykes' guitar turn.
He had an album out that year, Contagious.
Okay.
Remember, but so yeah, there were so many good albums.
It's a lot. Yeah, no doubt. No doubt, man.
I just saw Alice in Chains formed in 1987.
Okay, cool.
But there's lots of groups that formed in 87.
Yeah, Facelift came out in 90. Yeah, okay, cool. That's a neat nugget,
anyway,
though.
So that's it. You have anything to finish off with?
No, I don't think so. It's funny. I enjoyed doing the podcast when we did it a few years ago, and I think I even had more fun this go around. Yeah, definitely enjoyed it.
Okay. So, yeah, if you're listening, make sure you subscribe to us or like us, rate us, whatever. Maybe give us your top 10 of 1987 because there's so many things that, you know, and we could do this tomorrow and have almost 10 different albums if we really wanted to.
Really? Yep.
Okay. So thanks, Eric, for joining me.
My pleasure. Thank you, Blake.
Yes. And thanks, everybody, for listening. And hopefully next week we'll talk to you again.
This is Freya. You have been listening to the Metal Pit Podcast. Please visit our socials and our website, www.themetalpit.org. Check out Blake's other podcast, Someone's in My Fruit Cellar Podcast. Please rate and subscribe wherever you listen. Play it loud.